Wondering how unfortunate it is for me to follow Alan McLean and David Cameron, because unfortunately, unlike their vast experience, although they look younger than me, these bios just developed over the last 15 minutes as I was thinking. Apart from my own personal reading and my own just experience of 9 years of teaching, a lot of this is observational, but I'm hoping that it will be inspiring enough that it gives you some food for thought and it complements everything that's been said already. I must admit, one of the biggest challenges for me coming up here right now is just how emotional I was when I was hearing all that information you were giving. And you're hearing of the young people that came through their education system and the challenges that they face, and also how beautifully simple it can be to give them that inspiration and that aspiration. I'll tell you just very quickly how I'm here speaking in front of you. I held an information evening, or I was part of an information evening for our parents, and I was talking about mindset, and you've all have heard of growth mindset, but what I became aware of, that it then almost became a buzzword. People started saying we need to give our children growth mindset, so there was this understanding of this of theory on it, but what did that actually mean in practice? And so I delivered this small talk to the parents, and they were coming up after me saying, I've never had a 16-year-old daughter before, and you seem to have a lot of 16-year-old, some of these 16-year-old daughters come through your school, and you know an awful lot about how you talk to them, but you hold evenings in classes, parenting classes. And I think it just showed me, our parents felt so lost sometimes. There was so much information, and all they were getting hit with was, just make sure your children have got a growth mindset and they'll be okay, and they didn't know what that meant, practical terms. And when I delivered that, somebody came and said, would you mind speaking at the STEP conference? So that's why I'm here. My name's Jay McIntyre. I was a math teacher until October, and now I'm principal teacher of RE. Funny enough, it's a weird change. I think they realised I could talk. So, without further ado, the three bits of paper under your chair, or the three bits of paper that I handed to you, or the three bits of paper you tore off one of the booklets, what I would like you to do is, with this single sheet of paper, could you please create a hole in this paper big enough for you to fit through? Thanks. Actually, some people look, that was far too easy. Could you make it big enough for two people to fit through then? And we'll try and get some collaboration in as well.
Yeah, and then split it.
And then it's split. Listen, I'll tell you, there's two ways of doing this. I don't know if many people did it this way, they folded it up and then ripped it down that way. And there's another way of doing it where you can just... But you ripped it so, and it goes all the way around in a spiral. See how we're on spirals today. I like this. I wonder if you can indicate this in, Alan. I was going to have four different ones, four different stages, and say this is what I did earlier. Today, if you make a wee split in the middle here, and separate it through the middle.
Hard to learn.
Yeah, there we are. That's more important. How many people tried all three bits of paper?
Me?
Yeah, did they give that young lady right there?
I got a 4
because they got a 4, she became resourceful. She needs another one. That's my point. I became very aware that although we want to be able to praise effort, although we say we have to praise the right attitude, there's something built in, and when somebody gets to the answer, well, well done, and then it sort of disconnects all the other people that were trying that activity just the same. So, yeah, so, well, it wasn't me, and I never got that achievement. I didn't learn anything there. And to be honest with you, that's the God's honest truth, I never went to the second workshop. Because in the second workshop was when I went back out to my car to make sure I still remember how to do that. That's God's honest truth. So, for me, I wanted to get to the point where we realised ourselves, if we are either parents or teachers, how we can understand it and we can appreciate it, and we can sit and we can nod and we can take notes, and then sometimes when we go back in the classroom and the life affects us, and we don't realise how we're reacting. So I had put down this talk was Simon Says, what we preach and what we teach, and I think in some way that highlights some of that. I know what I should be telling the pupils, but unfortunately that's not what we're actually teaching them sometimes. And the same thing was why you should aim to fail. So much of it's covered already, so I'm fearful in case I'm repeating myself, but why should we aim? Why should we allow the pupils to aim for failure while they're learning? And so when I looked into this, for me, observation is quite straightforward. You know, it gives them that, what we're talking about, the reality, because they're going to fail within the classroom while they're learning. Every single time. I mean, we're doing an activity like this, but that's how the children feel every single class they go into. They go into a class and we're giving them a new concept. It feels like they're trying to tear a hole big enough for the two of them to fit through in an A4 sheet of paper. It's impossible. Or it almost seems impossible to them. So it gives them that reality. In fact, what happened 2 days ago when I was giving a question out to the class and we were working in groups, I said to one young girl's Lauren, I says, how are you getting on with that? She says, not very good. I says, okay, we'll keep trying, I'll come back in a couple of minutes. I turned around to Iona, I says, how are you doing? She went, well, if Lauren can't do it, I've got no chance. And I thought, wow, that's self-doubt right away. That she's already comparing herself to the person sitting next to her, and she's thinking, she knows maths, she was born with a maths gene, and I wasn't. So if she can't do it, I've not got a hope. And then there's the avoidance barrier as well. But they try almost to avoid any pain, any psychological pain. So they avoid chasing that failure because they're just fed up with being beaten down. But again, it's given a sense of reality. That happens outside in life. Any successful person has failed. You've seen all the posters and all the quotes, and you'll be used to the Michael Jordan ones, or the Winston Churchill ones, or the Oprah Winfrey ones. And the thing is, what a wee change is, they say, despite all of these things, despite all these challenges, they succeeded. Well, there's a beautiful book called The Obstacle is the Way by a guy called Dan Holiday that says, which basically sums up that. It's not that they succeeded despite these challenges or these setbacks, they succeeded because of them. So again, for me, when we're trying to get the children to chase their failure when they're learning, it's because every other successful person that's came before them has experienced failure and then grown from that experience. Now, if you see me touch my shoulders and sort of rubbing my collarbone, I had a presentation today in a PowerPoint. I saw it last night. I thought, do you know what? If I'm talking about learning and taking risks, why not take a risk at 10:45 the night before I do the presentation? So I tried to learn a new memorisation technique, so I've done it without the presentation. So if you see me doing this is to remind me of Orville, right, yeah, that's right, to remind me of the flies. And the wings, yeah. Or maybe it was yours, Alan, maybe that's what it was, maybe it was the wings. Because what they did, when they were failing, as I said, the wings, collarboard, right, wings, oh, yeah. They had their why was big enough, okay? There's a man called Simon Sinek who wrote a book saying, make sure your why is correct first. And he told a brilliant story about the Wright brothers, and another man called Samuel Pierpont Langley. And both of these people were trying to create the first machine that could fly. But the difference between them was one of them was so scared of failing and the other ones were wanting to embrace failure. And the difference was as well, one of them had a huge why they wanted to do it. They wanted to revolutionise how the world connected. And the other one wanted, as we're looking at earlier, status. And he wanted money and he wanted fame. And what happened was, the day after the Wright brothers managed to fly the first plane, Mr. Pierpont Langley retired and quit. Instead of using all his experience in collaborating and working with the Wright brothers to improve it further, he said, well, I'm not first, I'm not the best, I'm not famous, I'm not rich, and he quit. And that reality of this constant improvement through failure. That is not shown to your pupils outside the real world. What they're shown is a lottery effect. They're shown that they're only shown, they're told about the Wright brothers, and they're told about Bill Gates, and they're told about these famous people, but they're not told about the work and the effort and failing had to go on before they got there. And that's why I think it's important that we communicate to them that failure is part of the process and is key to them. Now, the problem with that is we know that. We know that's what we should tell them, but we don't communicate that because when we look at the communication triangle, I don't know if anybody's ever seen that before, but there at the top of it is words. And they say that 7% of communication is directed through words. So, 7%, I mean, I'm thinking, I'm standing here, I'm talking, I'm very aware of it, I'm very aware of what I'm saying, I'm thinking, how much of this is being true? The next part is tonality, and that's worth 38%. And to show you how the difference that makes, I'm just trying to put your name, Liz. Okay, Liz, so let's say I finish this, and you say to you, Jamie, you really need to improve your memorisation technique, but I enjoyed the talk, thanks very much. And I say to you, Liz, thank you very much. I look forward to seeing you again in another one of your next. Fair enough. If I change that to Alex slightly and say the exact same thing, say, thanks very much, Liz. I really enjoyed you being here today. And I can't wait to see you next time. Five times more effective just by changing our tone. And if I'm thinking how we communicate to our young people, what we're saying to them in a situation is, we might be saying, just keep trying. But what we actually saying is, just keep trying, alright, just try it again. And what we're communicating is five times more, which is saying, look, you're really frustrating me here. And if you don't pick up and start trying, you're not going to get marks that I think you should get and my job's in the line. The second thing, or what's more important even in tonality, is body language. 55% is body language, Liz. And now I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you now how body language works. So if I could get, please, this side of the room, just to close your eyes for a wee second. I promise, Liz, I'm not coming any closer. This side, you can close your eyes for a wee second. And this side of the room, if you could just follow my instructions, which is to raise your hand as high as you can, please. Right? Okay, thank you. Put your hands back down. And this side, you can open back up your eyes again. And could you lift your hand up as high as you can, please? Okay, hands back down. Could you explain this side, what you think just happened between those two instances here? Did anyone else?
They were thinking out the box.
Hmm?
They just copied you, because they saw you right up at the top.
Did I say anything different?
No.
For those that had their eyes closed, I say to this side of the room, can you raise your hand as high as you can, please? So they raise their hands, and I went like that, and they all raise their hands higher. And this side of the room, what I said was, can you raise your hand as high as you can, please? But I raised my hand as high as I could. And then you just raised it as high as you could, and you're getting high. You even stood up. Right. My point. So you can see the point is that I say the same words, I use the same tonality, except what I displayed was different, and that's what communicated to half the room in a split second. And again, when we are in front of a class, in front of a teaching, our body language says everything. Yeah, we might be having a bad day, and yes, it might have been a tough lunchtime, and yes, you might be coming away from this thing totally inspired, getting the staff room, people having a bad weekend, so you're feeling a bit down and thinking worthless, you get into that classroom, you'll be saying all right things, and you can be saying it in the right tone. If your body language doesn't say what you're trying to communicate, unfortunately that's what the pupils are going to get from it. So, how do we address that? And I must admit, honestly, I just need to be honest with you. I'm saying this now, and I'm thinking, what authority have I got to say this to you? I'm listening to people just now from this morning who have done research and written books on it. And as I say, I'm standing here just giving you my honest opinion on it, and that's really it. But this is how I've went around some of these and trying to address it. And it's simply reflecting upon myself and realising our own limitations. It was mentioned earlier on. There's a fantastic book by a man called Peter Drucker, and the tiny book's called Manage Oneself. And it's about being honest with yourself, being honest with what your qualities are, and what your maybe limitations are. And it's not about saying that you can't improve on anything, it's just saying, look, what am I really strong at? And what are the things that really are going to take an awful lot of time for me to work at and not really change me as a person? So I realised when I read that book that one thing I was good at was talking. It doesn't mean that I was a good talker and I was well received, but I knew I talked a lot. And I knew that if I could get the content to match that, it might be quite inspiring. So I had to look in ourselves and say, what is it? What is our own mindset? And I want to show you this situation. Just calm down. Now, the words are calm down. That's obvious, right? But what I'm communicating is absolutely everything of the opposite of calm down. Right? I'm really sorry. your martial arts are wonderful, she went up. So we're saying calm down. I love the other one where it says, look, turn the other cheek. And I'm thinking, if you ended up getting caught off in the roundabout at Bridgie Island, you may have turned the other cheek, but it wasn't these two. Because we know again what we should be saying, but do we actually display it when the situation is required is to do so? So you have to recognise your own mindset. Second of all, we've looked at it before, it's praising the effort. The effort that took place just now there was great, but so many of us done one piece of paper and realised their limitations and then gave up. So we've got to be trying to check ourselves to make sure that's what we're doing in the classroom, I believe. The situation I gave to the parents was, if we go to a dancing competition, and you've got your daughter at the dancing competition, and she doesn't succeed. She goes there and she does well, but she doesn't win the gold medal. She doesn't win the medal. What do we say here? Sorry, sweetheart, the judge was a Homer. Homer, it was that year. Don't worry, sweetheart, I still love you. Which I'm sure she does. I'm sure the mother does love her. Or third of all, you weren't good enough today. And I know that gets a couple of raised eyebrows, because good enough's a hard concept, because I think that we're all good enough. If we're all good enough and we accept ourselves being good enough, but I don't mean good enough in achievement and good enough in accepting yourself, I think of two different things. What I mean is, you weren't good enough today. Somebody was better than you today. Now, did you enjoy coming here today? Yes. Did you have fun? Yes. Do you enjoy dancing? Yes. Do you enjoy your friends you go dance with? Yeah. Do you enjoy the competition? Yeah. Great. Well, we'll keep coming. Do you want to win? Yeah, I would like to. Well, you need to try harder and put more practice in, like some of the other kids are doing. And thinking, that's love. Because what that's telling us is given the reality. I don't think some people, when I hear about growth mindset, it's like, well, just tell them they're great. No, just be honest with them. Be honest with them what the reality is. My personal story with that was my son was playing pro youth football. And there were 16 boys there they had to pick from. Sorry, they had to pick 16 boys from a pool of 20. And he was in good, he had a good chance. He had a good chance. He'd been working hard. And then three weeks before they were due to make choices who was going in, one of the local teams collapsed, one of the other pro youth teams collapsed, Clyde. So we got an influx of 10 boys. So then went to 30 boys they had to choose 16 from. So when it came to make the choice, he took some of the kids aside and said to him, look, you've got 6 weeks, you're on trial for 6 weeks. Connor was one of the five. Some of the parents were saying, this is unfair. It's unfair that these Clyde boys have come in here, etc, etc. They should have stuck to their own ones. Thinking, what if that was your own kid? Right, that his team had folded. So I had to take Connor saying, look, Connor, that's what happens in life for you, man. Right? Sometimes it's not all goes your way. These guys are in here. These boys have got as much chance as you. They should be given the same amount of chance. He says, what are you going to do for the next 6 weeks? He said, I don't know, Dad. I said, do us a favour. Go and ask coach the three things you need to work on. they moved to you. I said, just go and ask them. Like, you put me in charge for 3 weeks, 6 weeks, sorry, what was the three things you need to work on? So one was balance, one was checking his shoulder, and one was his fitness. I said, right, man, why don't we work our hardest for the next 6 weeks to try and make sure we get picked? And if you do get picked, then that's absolutely brilliant. And if you don't get picked, what you've installed in yourself is that when you go to your boys' club team, you'll be the fittest boy in there with the best balance, right? And you'll be always checking your shoulder. So hopefully you'll make it in the local football team. I'm glad to say 6 weeks later, Connor did get picked for the pro years. But he decided not to go because he was all his mates on the local football team and he went there instead. So if we can focus on the effort, then the outcome becomes irrelevant. The second thing is that it's something that's built in us. If we give a question in the classroom, for instance, at the beginning, a starter question, even if it's a high order thinking question, we always ask, how did you do? How did you do? How did you do? Did anybody get it right? We say at the end. Did anybody get the right answer? And some of them are putting their hand up and thinking, you know, yeah, me. Go on, Alex, could you tell me how you did it? Well, I did this, I did that. Give Alex a round of applause. Again, it's not that we're doing it because we're thinking we want to deprive the other children that are not succeeding. But it's just natural because it's a culture that I think we're married into that we've got to praise the result rather than the effort. So I had that 2 days ago, and it was a young boy called Alex. And what we had to do was we had to take the letters. A was associated with number one all the way through his head, being how many letters now, Megan?
26.
See, when they know the answer, they not just want to shout out. Right? How many people have had them say, oh, I don't know the answer? 26, that was brilliant. So, through his head at 26, and I asked if anybody managed to get, they had to try and make the word 50. You can check this, by the way, I've not made this up, they had to try and get the add up to the word, the number 50. So, we get a lot of the bags, he's then, I get 68. And I said, what do you put? So I just picked my name, it's Morgan. And I said, all right, Morgan, if you tell me all individual letters, so she gave me individual letters, etc. She had 68. The R was worth 18. And I said, if only you could take the R out, and you took the R out. And did you say something? No. Take the R out. Maybe. And then you say, oh, see, but that doesn't make any sense. And then somebody else says, oh, you can make mango out of the remaining letters. So she's now called Mango. So we've now got Mango, who managed to get 50. And somebody else who gets 63, and I says, what do you get after that? Well, then you get 62. Praise that. And I did, young Alec, I keep seeing your name's not Alex. Has there been any chance? No. He sits there, right, when I'm standing past, he sits there. He looks a little younger, just slightly. And he had his hand up, and he said, sir, I've got 50. And I said, that's okay, Alex. And I'm sorry, 75, sir. Sir, but I've got 50. And then we moved on to the rest of the lesson. And Alex, when you looked at Alex, he was absolutely distraught. He says, what is that? I don't know what he's after me. I says, what's the matter? I says, sir, I had the right answer. And I says, I know, Alex, but if that was the pinnacle of the starter, I says, I can tell everybody, it's just strategy that we're interested in. It's just about the effort. I says, but if I tell them all of that, and the last thing they remember is me seeing Alex get 50 and give a round of applause, then they remember. And the final thing for me is show your own vulnerability to your pupils. For instance, if they say to you something like, sir, do you know the 12 apostles? Do you know their names? Ah, of course I do, John. See, if you look at that smart board now, just to get the Matthew and of St. James and St. Peter. Yeah. Okay, what were you saying there? Or if they say, sir, can you help me with this? And you look at it and you think you can. Yeah, I'm just really busy now. If you get back 5 minutes and then you go into Hugo. And the pupils are coming into your class and they're thinking, oh, can you wait till I get to your age? Why? Because you must get to a certain age where you just know everything. And is it really that difficult for us to say, I actually don't know, but you're a maths teacher and you don't know this question, or you're an RE teacher? Well, I know, I see them up. Yeah, I'm maths, I'll stick with maths, you see. You don't know this answer. But there's something beautiful, and I'm saying this more from a parental point of view and a teaching point of view, there's something beautiful when you just come in and say, I'm not sure, why don't we go and work out together? I'm not sure. Why don't you go and find out and you can tell me? And they've tried that in the classroom. You know, some of the challenges in the classroom is that they have to come in, the three have to come in today and try and catch me out with a question. It's not hard. Because they're so determined. They actually go out of their way to try and do something real difficult, and really they could have just stumped the 12 apostles. Now, the reason I keep pausing, my train of thought keeps going, because there's so many, I'm reacting so much to what went on earlier on today. And there's so many stories that sprung to mind. And one of them is, I can tell now, because there's a swear word in it, and you swore twice, so that means I'm allowed to say it. As educators, we're educating all through our lives to anybody who's sort of coming in contact with. And one of my great inspirations for me, and inspiration really is one of the key words, is my old man, my dad. He's a youth worker. And the best compliment that he got was a wee guy called Danny. His real name was actually Martin. He went to primary school with me. But he kept on going on about his uncle Danny so much, we just called him Danny. And I'm glad he'd never done that with me, because I'd been called Gran, probably, or Beef Bullocks, that was also. And he went through a lot of issues when he was younger. And he experimented with some recreational drugs and some made-up drugs that I don't think anybody else in the market had tried. But he used to go and seek solitude in the youth club. And my dad admits that they have an advantage over ourselves in the school, because it's an opt-in there. You know, so when they say, look, you can't come into this class, and you can't come into this youth centre, that they want to get back in. Whereas they're actually forced to come into your school, and we say, well, if you keep continuing like that, you're not allowed in here, and they say, you're beauty. And they just speed it up. But one of the best comments my dad got was when Danny was 25, and my dad was walking down the street, and he says, oh, my tire. He says, I want a word with you. He says, what is it? He says, you were teaching us and we never even fucking knew it. And my dad says, that's the best compliment he's ever had. And my issue here is that we're talking about assessments, and this is the only thing about the assessments being integral to it. We need to know what it is we're assessing them. I mean, there's so many things that I'm wanting to teach my children. I don't want to know if they've got it or not. Because I think some of the most valuable things that you're teaching these children are put in front of us, they can't be assessed. They can't be assessed on paper. I strive for the day when somebody comes down to me and says, oh, my tire, and finishes off that line. The best I can do with just now is a compliment or a criticism. I took the compliment I got 4 years ago. It was during Catholic education week. Now, I've inherited this role as principal teacher of the RE, and I'm not a qualified RE teacher. The parents love it. And so I thought we'd have some major events during Catholic education. We had collages going, we had Flickr photos. I told the kids to bring in their selfie sticks and they'd take pictures of their work, and then we'd put it in a big Flickr account and make this big portrait. I mean, I was going all out. I'd contacted the school's reporter from the Catholic Observer. I was going all out. I mean, I was at the posing stage. Everybody come and see me so I can make sure this job's permanent and then June. And one of my colleagues from the maths department came up and he says to me, this has got McIntyre written all over it. And I says, why? He says, you always set your expectations far too high, somebody else has got to mop up. And I says, there you are. Do you know, if that is what my teaching career is, that's what I wanted to be. You know, setting it far too high, but there's going to be a mess. But going back to the very start of it, letting our kids know that there's going to be a mess wherever they go. There is going to be things they're going to have to deal with. It might as well be the aspirations that are far too high, right, that they're always seeking for, and see the mess, and it's fun cleaning it up. And I'm going to tell you about clean up, actually. I've got two black bin bags. The paper's going to go in. And by the way, this might be really, really disjointed, because I had a clear path where I was going to go, but it just went to pot when I was listening to the guys earlier. One thing that stuck with me was the identity thing. And I read, there was a book called The 10 Regrets of the Dying. If you ever get a chance to read it, do so. There was a girl who was given palliative care to the terminally ill, and she, you know, it's the great equaliser, isn't it? You know, a lawyer, a doctor, I mean, you might even be a lowly teacher, youth worker, nurse, unemployed. This equaliser is death, and then the same emotions that we spoke about earlier, they're all prevalent in all of us. And they started hearing them just talking about the regrets that they had. So she said to Arse, I'm like, would you mind if I started documenting these? And he says, no, not at all, because it was at that time of their life, they just opened up. So they began to open up, and she began to write down a list. And it's just, could anybody guess what the number 5 was?
I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I'd spent more time with my family.
Yes, who did that rank?
I wish I hadn't worked so hard was number 1. I wish I'd spent more time with my family was 2, I think. Third was I wish I'd stayed in touch with my friends. 4 and 5 I'm not sure because I'd probably intertwine them. But I heard them in Jane McGonigal's TED talk when she was talking about the work of video games.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, my version of that story is different. But that's okay, because failure's a good thing. On my part, I mean, you're right, obviously. But the number one for me, number two was spending more time with our family. Okay, the number one was, I wish I had lived a life more in line with my own values rather than expectations of other people. You know, that's huge. So despite everything that we're doing, if we have not got our identity, which is their identity, which is finding what it is that they want to do, and giving them that space and constantly putting aside their comfort zone and constantly stretching and challenging them, it means nothing if they haven't got what we spoke about earlier, finding that identity. And I would just remind that for yourselves as well. But some of the information here is incredible, but it can be pretty overwhelming as well. And especially for some of the probationers are coming thinking, do I need to master all this? No. Go and just hang on to the one thing that resonates most with you and be the best at that. Now, hang on to the rest. There'll be other people that'll be good at those different things. It'll be their identity, it'll be their values, and allow that's great. And allow them to have that, allow them to run to that, but don't compare yourself to them. And don't turn around and think, well, if they're that good, I have to be that good at that. Just you find what it is that you have, your identity, your strength, your passion, your goals, and then work damn hard and put the time and effort in to master them.